Tony Gosling, welcome back.
Richie Allen, thank you for asking me once again.
What the hell is wrong with your connectivity down there in Bristol? It's almost
it's
like...
nothing wrong with...
Go on.
Yeah, it's Skype. It's just Skype.
Yeah,
Skype
I know the way it is.
Messing with my Android, if that makes any sense.
It certainly does, sadly. It messes with my Android as well, despite me telling it not to. Always brilliant to have you on.
Julian Assange, he revealed in 2017, Vault 7, that there are a whole load of tools out there, and he published the manuals to them, where you can go into Android from anywhere and just play with it. I mean, when the phone is connected up to the data or up to the Wi-Fi, you can just go in and play with people's phones via the Android operating system. And Assange proved that.
It's that easy.
You have to buy the product, which is a hacking tool. But the Israelis, the Americans and the Brits have all got these things. They can do it. And, of course, big commercial spying companies.
Speaking of Julian Assange, is it now inevitable that he's going to be extradited to the United States?
Well, call me cynical, but I think there's an element of this which is attempting to drag it out to give lawyers more and more and more money. And when you see a case that's dragging on like this is, you do, I think, have to wonder, well, how much money is being spent on legal fees here? And, I mean, it's like the old Charles Dickens grad grind versus grad grind. The longer it drags on for, the more lawyers make more money, don't they?
Yes, but... The fact is, the judge has okayed the extradition,
it's going to the Supreme Court almost certainly. I've just seen the letter from the Birnbeck solicitors or someone.
Yeah, it will go to the Supreme Court.
So I mean, the Supreme Court, with its great big all-seeing eye sitting in the middle of the court, if you look at it from above, is of course a copy of the U.S. system, and so most of those people, if not all of them, will be. Let's just say as it is, New World Order plants, operatives, who have, made their way up through the legal profession by giving credible excuses to do the wrong thing in the justice system.
I have a theory. You won't like it, but I think I've shared this with you before. I don't believe the Julian Assange story. I don't believe the WikiLeaks story. I never have done. Something about it didn't sit right with me. And I did a very hostile interview some years ago with Assange's number two, or he was Assange's number two, Kristen Rasnam was the guy's name, or is the guy's name. And I basically got stuck into him and suggested that really WikiLeaks never released any information that ever did any harm to any government. And I believe...
Well, just
before you come back in, I believe, I have no evidence to support this, I have to put my hands up, I believe that what is happening to Julian Assange now is very real and it's very wrong. But I also believe that Julian Assange was some sort of agent, was some sort of intelligence agent. I really do believe that. I have no time for Assange or Snowden or any of these people. Because ultimately the information they released...
I mean, do you know what he and his father were doing when he was a teenager?
What, you can enlighten me.
Well, over in Australia, what they were doing is they were blowing the lid on the nuclear testing that had been going on in Woomera and places like that. And they were, basically anti-nuclear weapons campaigners. I mean, he was brought up with all this stuff. And I think he realized he had these computer skills. He was a bit of a geek, And actually, they have released plenty of stuff which has been extremely harmful, which is why the Guardian, the New York Times, Der Spiegel, and these other newspapers have slowly been, over the last 6-10 years or so, turned away from any kind of doing this kind of expose investigative journalism stuff, which they did 10 years ago with Julian. And they've been infiltrated. They've been basically closed down. Any major mass media newspaper that exposed the stuff that Julian was exposing or copied it and used it, has been pretty much decimated and turned into some kind of propaganda rag, like The Guardian. There's very little. I mean, Richard Norton Taylor, who was their security correspondent for years, brilliant writer, he was even hoofed out. So the major, I think I mentioned that Vault 7 in 2017.
Yeah.
That was majorly embarrassing. I mean, they WikiLeaks showed that they had planned, the CIA, to hack into and force to crash not only aircraft and cars, but also locomotives, right? So talking about, one of these modern locos in front of a train, so they could just take it over and ram it into another train if they wanted to and make it look like an accident in order to assassinate people or to do whatever it is they wanted to do. This is majorly embarrassing expose of crime intent from the security services. It doesn't surprise me that we've had this, isn't it, covert sources bill passed in the House of Commons in order to now excuse all these security services and everybody else for committing crime. They're now allowed to commit any crime they want with impunity, pretty much. I mean, there are one or two small checks, but now the security services, MI5, MI6, GCHQ, the rest of them, and plus, various other government bodies can now commit crimes with impunity. So what I'm saying is I think they have damaged the reputation of these organisations like MI6 massively and the CIA.
But in the eyes of who, T? Hang on a second, hang on. In the eyes of who? Most people, I think, who have ever read a newspaper in their lives would imagine that the intelligence agencies of countries, regardless of which countries they are, but they do unspeakable things. That's what they've always done. And when that Vault 7 stuff, I didn't bat an eyelid when I read that. That's the point, you see, with me. Now, look, I'm prepared to be wrong. I'm putting my hands up here. I have no evidence to support what I'm saying. But I don't think anything released by these organisations, particularly this surveillance stuff and Snowden, this was nothing that people didn't know or didn't suspect.
Well, look, it was, though. You see, what it did is it provided the hard evidence of what we had suspected for a long, long time. So that is actually made a majorly important, I think. You know, for example, manuals of all these clever little nasty bits of software that can do this and that. This is clear evidence that the speculation that we, people like you and I have been doing for years about, oh, we can't trust these people. There it all is laid out. Now, I think he's done an absolutely brilliant job with that. And of course, it's not just about Julian. It's about, anybody that's been associated with WikiLeaks and getting interesting. The big story was the Iraq war story, where they showed the Americans machine gunning those Reuters camera people. This is terrible for the Americans' reputation, and this is the last thing they want spread all over the Western press, Richie.
But you think they cared, the Americans? They just carried on doing it.
Because they're desperate to save their own reputation. These intelligence services are constantly going to the politicians, etc., begging for more money and more money. That's the sort of thing that will make most ordinary citizens, anyone with influence in the United States, will say, hang on, what are you going to do with this money? Are you going to use it to murder more journalists?
Yeah. Look, I respect your argument. I'm going to leave, on this subject, I'll leave you with this question. And I've put this to very close friends of Julian Assange, people I've had on the program over the years, people like Ray McGovern and others have been on with me. Ray, of course, a former CIA officer. I know you know Ray. Here's my question. Where were the exposés of, for example, the round table groups, the Rockefeller Foundation groups? They were gaming. They were gaming these scamdemic situations. They were doing this years ago. How to, scare the bejesus out of people into taking vaccines and into being locked down. Where was WikiLeaks on the international pedophile rings that we know exist and that we know very, very high profile people? I'll give you an example of that. I think I got the only proper interview with Isaac Cappy, the actor. I had him on this program 5 or so years ago, and he told me that the level of pedophilia, of child abuse, in Hollywood circles, you're talking actors now, actresses, famous people, absolutely staggering. This guy then was fake suicided, Isaac Cappy, a year or just over a year after speaking on this program. I wonder, where's this brilliant WikiLeaks? Where's Anonymous? Where are all these groups on outing these pedophiles?
Well, good question. And the thing is that no media organization, whether it be CBS, the BBC, or you or I, it knows everything. And they can only work with what they are handed by whistleblowers. And this is the point. You know, there is, they've done, I think, tremendous job were absolutely riveting. History, rewriting certain bits of history, and also, of course, doing the same as I said before, which is nailing hard evidence of things that people had suspected for years. So they can't do everything. Nobody can. You can't. I can't. But I think they did a pretty good job in giving the US reputation a bloody nose right around the world, and particularly, importantly, in the mainstream press in the West. So, you know, they've really, I think, messed up the American plans to try and make out that they're any better than China, really.
Well, you've had the last word on it. Cheers, Steve. Here's a fascinating. No, you have. No, I have to be fair. I get to gob off, don't I? Plenty of times on this program. No, that's the final word on that. This is massive story. You're following this. I think this is massive anyway. What does it mean to be jabbed in the UK? The miscategorization of people's vaccine status. This is absolutely amazing. This came up on this program a couple of weeks back. I think I mentioned this to you today. Somebody was on talk radio and they said that, oh, they're not counting people who've had one jab as being jabbed, even though they've had a jab. And that has serious implications for how they are reporting on statistics around hospitalizations. You're all over this, Tony. This is a massive story. What's going on?
Well, it's really this report up on ResearchGate from Professor Norman Fenton. Now, I mean, the thing with ResearchGate, a lot of people, and I've shared this story with some of the mainstream and the report with some of the mainstream journalists I know, and they always come back to me and say, well, has it been peer-reviewed? Now, hang on a minute, you know, how can you peer-review something when as soon as you submit it, there are a whole load of people that pour all over it, share it with the other side, and the other side's lawyers are straight onto you to shut you down. So the fact that it hasn't been peer reviewed, to me, is doesn't really mean much at all. The fact of the matter is, we've now got an extension from 2 weeks to 4 weeks beginning, which is the amount of time after which you've had one of these COVID jabs, and I won't call them vaccines because I don't think they are vaccines. From 2 to 4 weeks, the amount of time that you have to wait until you're officially classed as vaccinated. Now, what that's done is it's allowed many of the people that have been dying quite quickly after having a vaccine to be miscategorized as unvaccinated. And what Fenton and his team in it's St. Mary's College in London have done is they've done a whole graph of not of the numbers, but of the rates and the percentages of people unvaccinated and vaccinated who've been dying. And it's pretty shocking to see. We're now in December 2021 at the point where there are roughly double the number of people dying, of all causes, by the way, who have been vaccinated than haven't been vaccinated. Now, that should be headline news, and it should really cause for a pause in the vaccination rollout. But, of course, as we know, there is not really, it's the wrong story, Richie. That's effectively what we're talking about here, the wrong story.
Let's just repeat what Tony just said there. He sent me this today. This is Norman Fenton, Claire Craig, who has been on TV quite a bit, Martin Neal and Joel Smalley, Queen's College. Latest statistics on England mortality data suggests systematic miscategorization of vaccine status and uncertain effectiveness of COVID-19 vaccination. And the gist of this, as Tony Gosling just told you, that twice as many vaccinated people, twice as many, are dying, as Tony said, admittedly, of all causes, then unvaccinated people are dying. Twice as many jabbed people are dying in the country than unjabbed people. That's beyond staggering. As you said, it should be headline news. These are not quacks. These are not conspiracy theorists. These are academics from Queen Mary University in London.
Yeah, let me just stress, Richie, that the guy could be wrong.
He might be wrong.
Yeah, but the point is, we need to know that this is an official academic opinion of a mathematician, a statistician, that is, you know, one of the best qualified people in the country to say this. But what's happened is got absolutely nowhere. And as I said, when I've sent it to journalists I know in the mainstream, I'm just getting a simple oh, well, it hasn't been peer-reviewed. You know, which to me, it shows you exactly how it works, which is where credible evidence is being just suppressed, simply suppressed by the system. We've got a system failure in our mass media that is not allowing us to interrogate anything which is anti-vaccine and suggests that the jabs might be harmful. Now, you know, this to me proves that what we've got is we've got a system which is basically marketing vaccines, marketing jabs. And Boris on the telly last night looked absolutely terrible, didn't he? As he was giving his address, telling everyone they've got to have a booster. Oh, Omicron is dangerous. Well, we know Omicron is not dangerous. Actually, it is. We know from South Africa that it's a mild version of the disease. It is, some have called, a gift from God, because if you catch it, you're almost 100% certain not to die of it. But it will give you a whole load of antibodies, and it will be like having the booster instead, and or having a jab. So you will then be immune. So look, we've got, I think, a completely dysfunctional mass media that all it can do is act like a billboard for Pfizer and Moderna.
Yeah, it's basically taking whatever Boris Johnson or Chris Whitty or Patrick Vallance or Jonathan Van Tam says, and it's rewriting it for broadcast, basically, and then just repeating it. And it's getting worse than that, because where you have national phone-in shows where people are ringing up and they've got a bit of an inkling that something is very wrong, and they're saying something along the lines of what you said, but obviously not as eloquently as you, but they're saying, look, there's something wrong here. They are being ridiculed and humiliated and thrown off of phone-in shows, and basically the audience is being gaslighted. I mean, this is astonishing.
I don't know. I mean, I think actually talk radio has done a pretty good job in allowing, I think, you know, this is basically ordinary people out there who are just feeling like, well, they've gone along with this so far, and now they feel like they've been conned. And, you know, of course, the main thing is you cannot de-inject this stuff. If you change your mind and you're losing confidence in Pfizer, and let's face it, Pfizer, for example, is a criminal organization. It's a criminal company. It's been proved criminal in Africa and elsewhere. It's the most heavily fined company in the whole of the pharmaceutical sector ever. By about two or three times more than any other firm.
Yeah.
And they have proven that they put large quantities of their budget for each vaccine that they market into bribing officials and attempting to bamboozle the judicial system if it looks like they may be being sued. They won't go into countries where people can sue them if they get injured or family members die after taking their Pfizer stuff. And so, I mean, my question is, why is it that the mass media in this part of the world is so in their thrall? I suppose the answer is that you've got quite a lot of people in those editorial positions who have got a vested interest of some kind, revolving door. Certainly, that's the case in the government advisory services, who seem to be turning from advisory services into the government itself, telling the government what to do rather than advising them.
Why, in your opinion, then, I mean, this might be basic stuff now. What I'm going to ask you might be very rudimentary, right? Why is Boris Johnson and Michael Gove and others, you know, so-called small nation conservatives, why are they going along with it?
Politics is a bit of a stinky game, isn't it? These people are just looking at their political careers. And people like Priti Patel, I think she's probably one of the worst in the cabinet. All they do is they say what they are told to say in the knowledge that it will they'll be promoted. I've just been looking over the last week. I came to London last week to look at something from history, which was the massacre of 30,000 Cossacks as the British army handed them over to Stalin at the end of the Second World War. They were prisoners of war in Austria. And almost all of them, there was literally only a handful of these 30,000 Cossacks left within a couple of years. They were sent to the gulags. A lot of them were executed. And the politician that ordered that was a guy called Harold Macmillan. Well, isn't it funny that a decade or so after that, Harold Macmillan was rewarded by being made leader of the Conservative Party and Prime Minister of Britain? So I think that is the sort of person that we're dealing with, these people who will literally sell their for their political careers, Richie.
Yeah, that's it. Well, that's part of it. I think Jeffrey Epstein has a lot to do with this, do you? I don't mean necessarily with this, with COVID, with Johnson. And there were more than one Jeffrey Epstein. I believe that ever since I had my own, I don't want to say that bloody A word, so I won't say it, but since I had my own epiphany, I've believed it, that they keep these people in check by compromising them sexually or with them.
No, definitely.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, but I mean, that was, I think, a Mossad operation, the Epstein and Maxwell operation. And, I'm just going back to the Kennedy assassination. There's a guy called, H.L. Hunt, who was a big, oil baron, and it was at his house in Dallas where they had the meeting with Edgar Hoover and Lyndon Johnson. This is the meeting just for the night before Kennedy was assassinated. And you know what? Inside his house was a special little room, exactly like Jeffrey Epstein's house in New York, where there was a whole load of recording equipment and a little control room to record everything that happened in every single room. So these were basically places where people could be brought and then recorded, and that evidence then used to blackmail them in the future. And it's as simple as that. I think that's exactly what Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein were up to. And, of course, once somebody is caught by their system, they may not even know it, of course, then they can be promoted into positions of power with the Epstein types and the intelligence people knowing that they can be easily bribed in the future. So they propel them into positions of power only to surprise them, maybe in 5, 6, 7, 8 years' time with that evidence and say, well, you know, you better sign on the dotted line, or this little piece of footage is going to be on the Daily Mail website tomorrow.
Fantastic, Tony. And I wonder how many conservative voters, people who have voted conservative their entire lives, I wonder how many of them are gobsmacked, absolutely confused. Why is Boris Johnson, the guy who wrote for the Telegraph for years, who railed against the introduction of ID cards, why is Johnson doing this? You've given the answer, I believe. Did you see what Hugh Grant tweeted to Johnson today, the actor Hugh Grant? Did you see it?
No.
Let me read it out. It's startling stuff, this. Hugh Grant tweeted, "You will not fuck with my children's future. You will not destroy the freedoms my grandfather fought 2 world wars to defend. Fuck off, you over-promoted rubber bath toy. Britain is revolted by you and your little gang of masturbatory prefects." Tell us what you really think, Hugh. Stunned silence from Tony Gosling.
Well, I mean, yes, I think Hugh Grant is, you know, can be really quite good.
We don't like you, though. We don't like you because of what he would do to the press if he was given his way. So we don't.
Well, that's right. He's an extremely iffy character, and he likes censorship a little bit.
Yeah. Hugh wants to bang as many hookers as he feels like without the press ever printing a word of it. That's about the size of it. That being said, he had a lot of good points. Everybody in the country, no matter what your status is, no matter how much money you have, is entitled not to have your phone hacked by some News of the World arsehole. I think you'd agree with that, T.
No, of course, absolutely. Although I think, you know, if someone is, I mean, this is the way we always used to work. I mean, I'm talking about 1980s BBC here, is that if you were suspicious about somebody and you thought that you were going to have to do some sort of a sting on them, and of course the journalistic sting is a very important role, and people have been doing this. I mean, Heiko Kuh, for example, in London from Speaker's Corner, he managed to sneak his way in and film inside the headquarters of Pfizer, for example. Brilliant. Yeah, we should be getting the BBC and ITV doing this. But no, Heiko, you know, the guy from Speaker's Corner, who's a friend of Piers Corbyn, had to do it. We also had Al Jazeera come over to the UK about 5 years ago and do that program called The Lobby, about the Israel lobby, secretly recording the political attaché at the Israeli embassy talking about £1 million slush fund to bribe the Labour Party to do what the Israelis wanted, and this sort of thing, getting rid of Alan Duncan from the Ministry of Defence, who was a minister, this kind of thing. So these things are really important. But what we used to have to do was you had to prove that there was evidence that the person was breaking the law in some way, And you have to take that evidence to your editor. It would then go up the editorial chain, and they say, well, actually, this is a really important story. Usually some correspondent or other in news would have a look at it, and they might be the person then to work with you on the story. And it had to get editorial approval, as, for example, the Panorama with Diana had to get, yeah, and back in the 1990s, and then you could go and do it. But that's the way you've got to do it. You've got to show that you've got evidence that some powerful person of some sort who deserves to be investigated, not some woman who's, you know, I don't know, staying with their 10 kids in a flat and claiming asylum or something. You know, someone who's got clout, weight and power, or a celebrity or whatever. And then you had to just basically cross your fingers and hope that you got approval to do that operation, which would, you know, and it was an operation because you had to, you know, fit yourself up with a hidden camera, hidden microphone or whatever. The stuff that Roger Cook used to do back in the 1990s. So it is feasible to do it. It's just nobody is doing it anymore. Absolutely nobody, as far as I can see, other than this ridiculous. I mean, have you seen this thing with Boris Johnson and the quiz? He's supposed to be, you know, and Starmer saying, isn't it terrible what he's done is breaking the law. What a load of rubbish. He's on Zoom, for God's sake.
He's on Zoom.
You know,
yeah.
How can, you know, this is making a mountain out of a molehill. And we're getting a lot of this. The idea is someone has put the message out there, get Boris, get Boris. And what worries me, Richie, is that Rishi Sunak is sitting there, the agent of Goldman Sachs and the City of London, rubbing his hands saying, well, of course, it will be me that takes over if Boris is shoved out of the way.
It will be him. It's inevitable it will be him. Failing that, it could be a general election sometime late next year. Forget the Fixed Parliament Act. Because of everything that's gone on, because of COVID and everything else, it's not completely out of the question that there might be an election.
It's very unlikely. That's really unlikely. The Tories are very unlikely to risk that because they've got such a whacking great majority at the moment. They're going to play that card for all they can, I think. It may well be, though, that Boris is replaced and Sunak is in a pretty good place. And that just means we're going to get a technocrat in charge, you know. But anyway, it may be that Boris can hang on there a bit longer. We'll see.
We are going to see. It's exactly 15 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. You're listening to the great Tony Gosling, friend of ours, all the way from Bristol. The politics show, not the BCFM politics show, on Fridays at 5 o'clock is a must listen. It really is. Do you know, your listeners are incredible. They come on, they go all over social media. They go on websites like my own website, always, every Friday, to put links out to say, look, Tony's going live. You've got an incredible loyal listenership. Do you know that? Incredibly loyal listenership. I hope you appreciate them, T.
Well, of course I do. And I mean, basically, I've done this as a journalist, I think, is to pick up on a tradition that I was brought up with, watching in the 1970s and 80s myself as a young man, as a teenager, you know, seeing, journalists like Duncan Campbell, doing brilliant bits of insightful television, which you can almost hear the airwaves crackling as it's going out. He did the Secret Society series, which was, of course, a bit of a hint at the Freemasons, right? Which was a whole series back in the 80s, looking at the way that the government is pulling the wool over people's eyes and the Ministry of Defence were. So, for example, he did a brilliant program about the Americans taking over Britain, basically, in a case of war. So basically the command structure of the country in wartime would be a US command structure completely basically controlling the British military. So, you know, it suddenly makes the American presence in Britain in places like Menwith Hill, over in Suffolk at the Mildon Hall and places like that, Fairford here in Gloucestershire, much more sinister. So it's not they're here as our guests, they're here as our masters. And of course this also, I mean, De Gaulle in France kicked the Americans out after World War II. And I sometimes wish someone had had the wherewithal to do that to the Brits as well, in Britain. But those are the sorts of investigations that were done. It was a different world because we're not really seeing this level of investigative journalism anymore. So I try and continue to do that every week, Richie. I try and find something that people genuinely didn't know about, you know, and haven't found out about. So I think that's what I try and do. Because, I mean, most of what I see in the mainstream is just recycling the same old nonsense.
Yeah, it is, yeah. No, you do it brilliantly, Dee. You do it brilliantly. You've been doing it for years, mate. I want to ask you in the 5 minutes that we have left then, it's inevitable now, isn't it, that what's happening is all about the vaccine passports and the vaccines themselves. No stone will be left unturned by Johnson. And we've already said this isn't Johnson's agenda. It's somebody else's agenda. He's just overseeing it or managing it. But they'll stop at nothing in their efforts to make sure that everybody eventually succumbs to these jabs.
Okay, so there's a real struggle going on, okay? Look at the countries and look at the places, the jurisdictions where the agenda is worst, right? I mean, I listen into RTE quite a bit, and I can see, obviously, the situation in Ireland is you've got a far more arrogant set. I mean, you know, amazing that they could be more arrogant than witty and balanced and the rest. But they are in Ireland extremely arrogant. They seem to be, you know, if you have a look at what's going on in places like Austria, Germany, Ireland, France too, to a lesser extent, what you can see happening is exactly what you've got in Brussels at the European Union, which is a whole bunch of civil servants, which is what the European Commission are, which is overseen by Ursula von der Leyen and her chums in the pharmaceutical industry, overseeing the politicians. So they are actually in the driving seat. The politicians are in the back seat. So the elected MEPs can bloviate as much as they want, you know, but they can't actually change anything. So that's what I think we've seen as a result of the United States of Europe and the EU, is that these countries have now got appointed civil servants in charge, and they're just having to do what they said. This is an administration which is being run from somewhere else, not from by the people. And luckily, we as Brits, however tough it gets here, we've managed to get out from that system quite early on. You notice the Poles, by the way, they have to suffer these, a million euros a month fines because they refuse to have their judges appointed from Brussels.
That's right.
Well, look, this is what this is really all about. You're moving into a totalitarian super state, very much like the United States of America run from Washington. The United States of Europe is being run from Brussels, and the ordinary people just don't get a look in. And I've been looking at all this, I mean, from right the way back to 1793, when that John Robison, who was the secretary of the Royal Society in Edinburgh and the inventor, by the way, of the siren, you know, the steam-powered siren, which would make a terrible wailing sound as a warning, he put out this book, Proofs of a Conspiracy Against All Religions and Governments, which was the Masonic plan to take over Europe. That was back in the 1790s, and he wrote that as a result of what had been going on in the French Revolution. He was a Freemason himself, and he was absolutely disgusted by what these new Illuminati-type Masons were doing to the craft. And the craft was, at that time, a brilliant idea, really, which was a speakeasy where you could go and say what you wanted without fear of being put in prison. And a lot of this stuff is in my book, which I did published as a paperback earlier this year, which is called The Siege of Heaven Reader, which has got extracts from the last 350 years, right the way back to the English Civil War and Cromwell, as to secret government behind the scenes. And, you know, I think that is a pretty good way. People haven't seen the way that the secret societies and vested interests work behind the scenes to control our destinies. That's a pretty good way into the topic. And there'll be something in there for everyone, I think, Richie, right the way up to all the stuff to do with the Kennedy assassination, Diana, Winston Churchill working with Oswald Mosley, you know, the leader of the fascists through the Second World War. And so there's plenty of stuff in there for people to get their teeth into. If they think that I'm just making this up, no.
Well,
there
it does.
A lot of hard evidence. And I'm doing a kind of WikiLeaks, really, but I'm doing it in a book form.
In a book
but
form,
I've got the hard evidence from the history of literature rather than them getting leaks, specific leaks.
Well, for those who struggle to compute that agendas can be rolled out over several centuries, because some people do struggle to take that on board. I did for years. I totally understand that. You know, I used to ask my guests, including you, why would you, you know, take part in an agenda that you won't see come to fruition for centuries. And truth speaking to people like you and others, that I began to understand that, that these are very long games these elites are playing.
Yeah.
And you do that brilliantly in the book.
But look, the funny thing is that the people who write these plans, people like Albert Pike, you know, the Grand Master of the Scottish Rite in the United States in the 1800s, they don't have to carry them out. They're leaving it to someone else and saying, well, here's the plan. By the way, I'm dead now, but it's up to you to make it happen.
Carry on.
And, of course, this is not necessary. I mean, he's basically abrogated all responsibility. And it seems to me obvious the end game here is to discredit all the monotheistic faith, that, you know, and including Hinduism, by the way, using fake versions, fascist versions of these faiths in order to create a massive conflagration between the Zionists and Iran in the Middle East, and then try and drag all the superpowers into that. And, you know, it's for some reason, you know, I look at what's been going on in the Middle East for the last 20 years or so, you know, ever since the first Gulf War in 1990, and scratch my head, what the hell are they up to? Well, of course, they're trying to create the next world war. And I think it's really that simple. And I've got information about that in the Siege of Heaven Reader 2, if people are interested about this, you know, this long-term plan to create another world war. And I think for some people, and me as well, looking at, you know, you say, well, you know, what is behind this? What possible motive could there be? And so you then dismiss it. But actually, there is, I think, a long-term motive involved in a lot of these diabolical plans.
T, we're going to leave it there for today. It's not going to be, the next time we speak will be in January, please God, hopefully. So let me just say thanks for coming on. You come on more than anybody else. You're my recurring guest. I love having you on to run down the news. No, I'm not, I mean what I say. And that's why I invite you on so often. So I'll take this opportunity to say thanks very much for doing that. You've never asked for anything in return. It's always brilliant. You're always excellently briefed, mate. And just want to wish you and yours a Merry Christmas.
Well, thanks very much, Richie. If anyone thinks they can get my book reviewed somewhere, I've been trying to get the books, well, two books, which is, the other one is looking at the links between the Nazis and the Allies at the end of the Second World War and the Battle of Arnhem. That was always a big mystery. Not anymore. This book, The Traitors of Arnhem, which I published at the same time, it also looks at the very close relationship between Hitler's private secretary, Martin Bormann, and Churchill's private secretary, Major Desmond Morton. And right at the very end of the war, everything seems to me was being fixed up. You know, they wanted all those, all the Nazi loot. They wanted all the Nazi technology, much of which was atomic technology they needed for the plutonium bomb, etc. And of course, then these Nazis needed safe passage after the war. So there were all sorts of deals going on, really, from around about August 1944, the Red House meeting in Strasbourg, onwards. And it seems to me that that's what we're having to deal with now. You know, the results of those deals between, you know, the Nazis and the Allies at the end of the Second World War.
Where can people buy the books, T? 30 seconds before we've got to wrap with you.
Okay, yeah. Well, if you go to Bilderberg.org, then you'll find links. But they're both on eBay. That's the only way I could find it. Amazon didn't seem to want to publish to sell them.
Surprise.
But Bilderberg.org is the best place to go. And you can get eBooks as well. There's even a free download. If people have got no money, you could get a free. It's not, the pictures are pretty pixelated, but you can still read the stuff. I would never put stuff out. It's just, the idea really is that sometimes it's nice to have actual physical paper.
An actual real book, yeah. Folks, don't download it for free. Buy the books. Go to Bilderberg.org. I've got the two of them here. I'm looking at them on my shelf here in the studio. T, Merry Christmas, as I said already, and Happy New Year. I'll send you a text over the Christmas, and I look forward to speaking to you again in January.
I just say one positive thing about all this is, I think, you know, the Tories seem to me to be slightly in the situation where they may be manoeuvring to get rid of the pharmaceutical faction, which has been influencing the top of the party. So we may see something a bit positive next year with Boris out of the way and somebody a little bit more sensible in charge. Or it may just be, you know, that Boris is, you know, he has his hands sort of twisted behind his back, and he's forced to change course a bit. So we'll see.
We'll see.
But we are very lucky that we're not part of this. We're not part of this United States of Europe. Otherwise, we'd be in a much deeper doo-doo.
at the moment, no doubt. Cheers, T. Thanks for that. Tony Gosling, folks. Thisweek.org.uk. Go to Bilderberg.org and listen to not the BCFM politics show, which is live every Friday at 5 o'clock from Bristol. As I said, to listen to that, go to thisweek.org.uk. But it's always shared. The link is always shared on the comment section of my own website, richieallen.co.uk, on Fridays. Tony's listeners, they are legion. They put the link out so you can listen to it. It's always brilliant, as he said earlier on, information that you may, much of the time you've never come across before. That's Tony Gosling on Monday's Richie Allen Show, live from BBG Towers here in Salford. Thanks so much to Gareth Icke. And to Tony Gosling, thank you for listening. We'll do it again tomorrow, Tuesday, at 5 o'clock UK time. Take care of yourselves and one another. From your BBG, arrivederci.